Welcome to Gospel Truth with Andrew Womack, a teaching ministry that focuses on God's unconditional love and grace. On today's program, Andrew interviews David Barton about the origins of Thanksgiving and America's godly heritage. And now here's Andrew.
Welcome to our Friday's broadcast of the Gospel Truth. Today is the end of my second week interviewing David Barton, and I tell you what a blessing this man is. He has just given us a lot of information. I've been encouraged as we talk about the things about our godly heritage, and we've been focusing primarily on Thanksgiving, but in the process of talking about that, we've talked about the pilgrims and what their godly foundation was and just a lot of things and made applications to our day. But I tell you, it's important that we understand our godly heritage. And yesterday we mentioned a bunch of things, but one of them was a quotation from George Washington that it is our duty as a nation to recognize and thank God for what He's done in this nation. And so I try and live every single day of my life in thanksgiving to God. But there is a duty also as a nation to recognize God as the source of all of these things. So we've been talking about that, and it's been awesome. David, before we get right back into it, let me just mention that when I was with you in May, I believe it was, in the state capitol, you made a statement, and I think it was from a Barna survey, that 70 to 80-something percent of all Christian youth lose their faith in God after going to college.
Yeah, it is not a very good picture right now we have of kids. And there's a number of studies that looked at, Barna has done some, others have done some, and somewhere between 71 and 88% of kids who are Christians, who are raised in Christian homes, deny their faith in 4 years of college. We actually now have two national legal groups who do nothing but try to defend kids who are being attacked. I get reports from kids who said, I went in class my first day, professor asked us, 300 kids in class, asked us, how many of you are Christians? We raised our hands. He said, you won't be when you leave this class. He announced that right up front. And so we have now two legal groups who try to defend these kids who are getting attacked, but they can't defend all these kids. And as you look right now at the studies on professors, just nationally right now, America self-identifies 33% conservative and 17% liberal. Okay, so by 2-to-1 margin, more than, and the rest are in the middle or some fringe. But conservative versus liberal, 2-to-1, 33-to-17. University professors, only 15% identify as conservative and 72% as liberals. 5-to-1 the other direction.
Well, I've seen that same stat, like when it comes to the Hollywood, that there's like 5% of Americans claim to be atheist or mm-hmm. something like that. 95% believe in some kind of God. But in Hollywood, it's reversed.
It's reversed.
95% are atheist or agnostic.
Yep. We have seen it, and it was up until probably about 8 or 9 years ago that media was the most anti-God, anti-biblical group out there. Professors have now passed them. So media is still, and we know how hostile they were, but professors, and most folks aren't aware that professors have gone past
them.
That's
terrible.
Now see, the other stat that is so bad is we say, well, I'm not going to send my kid to a secular college, I'll send them to a Christian college. Careful. Stats also show that over 50% of our Christian kids renounce their faith at Christian colleges. How can that be? Because
they aren't Christian.
Well, that's exactly right. Where did these Christian PhDs get their PhD from? From all these pagan PhDs. And so Jesus tells us in Luke 6:40 that every teacher, every student, when he's fully trained, will be like his teacher. So these PhDs in Christian universities often get trained by pagans, and they think just like them. They just happen to be at a Christian university. Yeah. Now, I know some good Christian profs. I'm not whacking all profs. But I'm telling you, you better be careful for your kids.
Yep. But, you know, since you said that, I came back, and that really affected me. And I talked to Gary Lukey, the director of our college here, and we just said, we've got to do something about this. And so our Bible college here is a 2-year college with a third year, and the third year is primarily to train people and get them directly into business and into things like that. But it's basically a 2-year college. But after hearing this stat, we came back and we are beginning to have creationists come in and start teaching on creationism versus evolution and defending the Bible. We've got courses that we've put into place on homosexuality, abortion.
That's right.
And things like that, making Christian values on these social issues. And the reason you're here is because you've been teaching in our Bible school for 2 days, and We've talked to you, and you're going to get even more involved next year and help us to put in this godly Christian heritage. So the reason I say all of these things is to say that if a person has children or grandchildren that are going to be going to a secular university because they need to become a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever, you owe it to yourself to send them to a Bible school that would at least equip them and give them a foundation so that they could deal with this stuff.
One of the things that I think is really important where the church has fallen down in recent years is apologetics. Mm-hmm. We know what we believe. We don't know why we believe what we believe. And 1 Peter 3:15 says we're to be able to give a reason, not an answer, a reason for the hope that's within. Are you a Christian? The answer is yes or no. What's the reason? Reason's totally different. And I explain this to parents by asking a question. I'll stand in front of the church congregation and say, how many of you believe in the virgin birth of Christ? Everybody raises their hand and say, give me five reasons you believe that. I haven't had an adult give me one reason yet on why. That's a Christian doctrine. They don't know why they believe it. How many of you believe the Bible is the inspired word of God? All the hands go up. Give me five reasons you believe that. They can't give me any reason they believe that. So what happens is these kids go in and the professor will say, how many of you are Christians? How many of you believe in virgin birth of Christ? They all raise their hands. They've been taught to do so. He said, have you ever thought about how stupid that is? You can't have a pregnancy and be a virgin. There's no, you've been misled. Your parents and your church, you're stupid if you, and they go, oh my gosh, this guy's got 14 PhDs. I've never thought about that. You can't be a virgin and have the virgin birth. They don't know how to answer it. And so what happens is they get picked off. And
I think
what
they
we've
also
not done,
attack from the evolution side.
That
they is
do.
Such a, you know, established fact by some people's standards.
That's
that,
right.
Man, if you believe that, it undermines the Bible. It's no longer accurate.
If you kill Genesis, you kill the Bible.
That's right.
Genesis is called the seed plot of the Bible. Every major doctrine of Christianity has its roots in Genesis. You lose Genesis, you lose the Bible. And if you lose the creation evolution debate, you lose your faith.
And, you know, you referred to Barna Survey, and I think this might be some of those pastors that you were part of calling. But out of these pastors who even said that they believed in creationism versus evolution, there was just a very small percentage that said they would stand up and say it.
That's right. That's
because
exactly right.
They don't want
they
the
won't
persecution
say it.
That comes
That's
with
right.
it.
And why are we scared to stand up for what the Bible stands up for?
I'm not.
See, that's we got to be careful that we're not having hirelings instead of pastors, because Jesus said the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. A hireling flees when trouble comes. You can't turn your back just because things get hard. You got to stand up and say, oh, is that a bear or a lion? Oh, it's Goliath. My bad. I'll take care of him too. You know, you got to stand up and take whatever danger comes. And we're turning and running from criticism. We're turning and running from a deacon who gets mad at us for having talked about something. We're turning and running from two phone calls we got and people complain. You can't do that.
It doesn't even have to be that. If somebody just rolls their eyes at you.
Exactly right.
That's enough to make most people back down.
I'll tell you, God got me early on, because what I talk about is hated by a whole lot of people.
I
get viciously attacked. There are groups that are paid. They will watch every program we've done. They will have blogs on what we talked about. They are paid to watch me and trash me. And so that happens. But before I knew any of this, I was just a cowboy from Aledo, Texas. Okay, I didn't know there was mean people in the world. You know, I just didn't know that. I didn't know they were organized at all. And God gave me Jeremiah 1:17. And he told Jeremiah, he said, if you look at their faces, and if that changes the message I gave you, I will break you to pieces from them. Got it. I won't compromise based on how people react. Mm-hmm. Well, little did I know that I didn't even know what God meant when people react. You know, I had a U.S. News World Report guy ask me one time, he said, did you know the ACLU just spent $1 million to discredit you? No, but that's $1 million they can't spend attacking a school district, and that's great, you know. So, but there's there's a lot of money spent. But I've been told by God that if the way they react changes my message, then He's going to break me, and I believe that. And He needs people that are not going to back down. And I will tell you, some of the most vicious criticism I get is from Christians, but they were the Christians trained by the pagans, the Christian university guys who were trained by the pagan university guys. And so the guys in Christians' clothing are oftentimes, and that's the way it was in revival. George Whitfield didn't get beat up by the secular guys. He got beat up by the Christian guys. Charles Finney, Second Great Awakening, it wasn't the secular guys that made fun of him. It was the Christian guys. Every revival that comes along, it's not the secular guys that go after you, it's the Christian guys that go after you.
Well, that's one of the problems in our nation, that you take the conservatives and they will fight each other.
You betcha.
Like, I know these programs are being taped, and so this will be a little bit out of out of date and out of sequence, but some of these things about trying to fund the government to keep it going and stuff, the Republicans have turned on each other and started criticizing each other. You don't see the Democrats doing that. They seem to stay in step with each other.
One of the axioms I learned long ago, because I was in political office for 9 years in Texas, partisan office, and then I'm an ordained minister, been involved in church ministry and church staff for long, and I came up with the same axiom for both of them, and it is, I don't need enemies. I got friends. You know, and they do worse than you. I've learned to wear a bulletproof vest, but it's always to the back because it's a friendly fire that gets you. We've never learned to play together in the same sandbox. That's what Nehemiah was able to get people to do. They all joined together in rebuilding the nation. And you just take care of your part. You don't criticize other people there, but you take care of your part. And if you'll stand up and show backbone and do what you're supposed to do, and everybody else does what they're supposed to do, we're in good shape.
So, David, I'm sure that there's Christians watching this program who really love God mm-hmm. and are committed to God, but they have drunk the Kool-Aid. They
That's
have
right.
either not been taught the things that you're saying, or they've actually been taught against it,
mm-hmm.
and they are just highly offended, and yet they love God. How do you reconcile these things? What do they do?
There's a couple of things that I think are really, really significant. Paul is the most credentialed apostle of all the early church. No question. He studied at the feet of Gamaliel. He was a Pharisee of the Pharisees. He was everything. He had every PhD that you could get in his day, he had. And in Acts 17, and he loved the Thessalonians. He wrote two letters to them, two letters in the Bible, or to the Thessalonian church. He loved them. But he said, I like the Bereans even more than I like the Thessalonians because they refused to believe me. These guys don't believe. He said they search the scriptures every day to see if I'm telling them the truth. And that was the deal. He said, don't believe me. Don't believe the credentials. Go see. Check it out. I have a whole folder full of testimonies like this. But one is a guy who was an ACLU member. He was an attorney. And he got really ticked off at me. He said, you're lying about all this stuff.
Now, was he a Christian too?
Oh, no.
So he was not a Christian.
Not a Christian. And he says, you're lying about all this. And he went back and he said, I'm going to prove you wrong. So he took my book, Original Intent, started going through it, checked all the footnotes, got a letter from him some years later. He said, as it turned out, you understated it. There was a whole lot more back there than what you said there was. As a result, he became a Christian. He's now a judge on a court of appeals.
Praise
and
God.
The reason he did so was he didn't believe me. He went to check the documents
mm-hmm.
out. What happens is if people don't go to check the documents themselves and just believe what they read on the web or on a blog or in the newspaper or what MSNBC says about me or something else, they'll never look. If they'll go look at the document, you know, we've talked about this last 2 weeks. That's the first ever printing in America of the Pilgrim's Records. It's online. Go read it. Don't believe me about Thanksgiving. Go check it out for yourself. Check the letter of Edward Winslow back to London back in 1622 or 23, where he described being there at the first Thanksgiving. He was there. He's the eyewitness. Read that. See, and that's what people need to get in the habit of. It doesn't matter how many PhDs you got after your name. Doesn't matter how credentialed you are. Doesn't matter if you're the Apostle Paul. I don't believe you until I go check it out for myself. And if
so
you do that, it's
many
it
of
a
your
difference.
Critics would sit there and say, this is illogical. You're just taking things on faith. You aren't thinking it through. So they're the ones that are actually illogical if they don't go and check up on all of the stuff that you're saying. If they really want to believe that mm-hmm. they're logic and they're the ones that are open-minded, then go look at the documentation for what you're saying.
One of the things, they won't say that it's illogical. They say that you're wrong because Professor so-and-so says what, if they don't quote the documents, they quote each other. And so they're in this incestuous little pool of collectivism where they quote each other. And a great example of that is when we did the book Original Intent, we have about 1,480 or 1,500 footnotes or something in that book, and they go back to original sources. And it's the founding fathers, their view of religion, faith, Christianity. And there's more than two founding fathers, by the way. People think that Jefferson and Franklin are only founding. There's 250 mm-hmm. founding mm-hmm. fathers. So about, you know, you get the two guys that weren't Christians, and they say nobody else was either. No, sorry, I'll take you the opposite way. And I often tell guys, I said, every one non-Christian founding father you name, I'll name five. Let's see who runs out first. Well, they always run out first, and I can give them more names than they even know about. They're not Christian. But that's the problem. We have it twisted the wrong way. So I did this book and said, look, America, Christian roots. As a matter of fact, the courts of the United States on 300 occasions have issued rulings saying that America is a Christian nation. And so they come and say...
That'll come as a total shock to a lot of
people.
Oh,
it's in court records. Don't believe me, because I've got it in the book. You can check all the court cases involved.
So how can they rule it's a Christian nation and then rule anti-Christian?
Because, this is what they do. In the case of Christian nation, they said, Barton's lying, it's not a Christian nation. Professor so-and-so said it's not a Christian nation. I gave you 300 court cases. You gave me the opinion of a professor over at some university. And that's what they do. And so what they do is they beat you up by quoting all the authorities who know. And so with me saying America has Christian foundations, there was a book that came out called In Search of Christian America, done by three Christian PhDs. And they said, no way. And so people said, how do you get an opposite conclusion from these guys? They're looking at American founding, and American founding is considered from 1760 to 1805. That's the founding era. They look at the founding era, say, no Christian. You look at the founding era, say, Christian. How do they do that? And I said, that's a good question. So I took their book, I went to the back of the book, I looked at the bibliography in the back, and they cited hundreds of sources. And that's good. I mean, you want sources. And then I plotted their sources. About 90% of the sources they cited were printed after 1960. So when you're looking at 1760 by reading books printed in 1960, we got a problem here. I went to ours, and I think 87% or something like that of our sources were actually from when the founding fathers were alive. They were their own writings from, and so I look at the actual documents of the founding fathers and conclude, yep, Christian. They look at all the opinions of the professors in the 1960s and say, nope, not Christian. And that's where the difference comes.
Yeah, when I interviewed you before, I can't remember the details, but you wrote about one book who had, I think, gone back to Lincoln, or it might have been, anyway, it was one of the early presidents, and just trashed them and stuff. And they didn't have hardly any bibliography, but they were proven to be wrong in these things. But nonetheless, that became like the textbook that everybody else started quoting.
There's one called The Godless Constitution, and it's done by a couple of professors at Cornell. And they say, look, the founding fathers wanted a secular nation. They deliberately created a secular government. Some of them may have been religious, but a secular nation was their intent. And you get to the back of the book, and it says, we have dispensed with the usual scholarly apparatus of footnotes. Not a single footnote in the entire book. Now, I can give you thousands of footnotes, but they say, look, we're PhDs. Trust us. We're telling you. They wanted a secular government. Well,
and
just
so
because you want one,
that's
right.
Without any bibliography,
they would not allow a single student in their class to turn in a research paper without a footnote to it, and yet they write an entire book without. And now courts quote that book as the authority on why we should have secular government because our professors say that this is a godless constitution.
You know, I often make this statement to people when I teach them what the word says, and they say, "Well, that's not what." And I say, "Well, most people don't let the Bible get in the way of what they believe."
That's right. That's
well, most liberals don't let the Constitution and truth get in the way of what they believe.
That's exactly right.
They just choose. You have to have a prejudice already. They have already in their heart rejected God, I believe, for personal reasons, and so they want to adopt this. They want to believe that there is no God because that way they can act like an animal aren't accountable.
They make God in their own image. They make government in their own image. They make the Constitution in their own image. The good thing about Jesus was in Matthew 4, when he got challenged in so many areas, he kept saying, the Scripture says. It is written. It is written. God says. And that's because he knew the Word of God. The problem with Christians today is they hear stuff out there and they don't know what God says. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'll just point to real quickly is, hey, we as Christians need to be taking care of the poor. The government needs to do more to take care of the poor. All right, here's the deal. The Bible gives you 205 verses on taking care of the poor, Bibles on taking care of the poor. If I take those 205 verses and take the ones that are directed at church, at family, and at government, the only thing the government's told to do with the poor is to make sure that when they come into court, they get justice. All the things on providing for the poor is told either to the individual or to the church. Nowhere does the Bible say, but people are told, 205 verses in the Bible on taking care of the poor. The government should be doing more with social programs. No, that's not. But if you don't know the Bible, you'll twist that into your own beliefs.
Yeah. I mentioned this earlier about a group of pastors who were debating education, and one said we shouldn't even have secular education. Well, it's the same thing. The government should not be doing welfare. The church is responsible for that. And if we would do it according to the Word, where if you don't work, you don't eat, and all of these other things, it would be totally different. You wouldn't have the second, third generation.
Let me throw out one of the things that's happening is our schools are not teaching good history anymore. Parents can do that, but parents are going to have to learn it themselves. So you got to turn off the TV occasionally. You're going to have to go get a book. You have to read a little bit of history and teach it to your kids. But I'll tell you one of the things. Choose this right here. That's the first textbook ever printed in the United States, 1690, Boston. from 1690 to 1930, if you went to school in America, you learned to read out of this book right here. So that little textbook right there. This is the 1777 edition of it. We reprinted this. This is John Hancock in the front because he was the hero in 1777. And so here's your reading text for 240 years. There's John Hancock. So here's first grade question. 168 first grade questions in the back of this book. Here's your first grade questions. What is the fifth commandment? What's required in the fifth commandment? What's forbidden in the fifth commandment? What's the reason annexed to the fifth commandment? Let me back up to some other first grade questions. First grade question. How does Christ execute the office of our Redeemer? How does Christ execute the office of a prophet? How does Christ execute the office of a priest? How does Christ execute the office of a king? Another first grade question here. Question number 36. What are the benefits which in this life do accompany or flow from justification, adoption, and sanctification?
Wow.
Public school.
First grade. 200.
So we just reprint a bunch of old public school textbooks. Just get some of these. Just
so if the people have been motivated by what you say and they say, all right, how do I relearn this stuff? How do I teach it to my kids? Tell them about some stuff that's on your website.
Our website's got a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of good publishing companies out there that have some. We have something called Drive Through History. It's designed really for about junior high to show them God's hand in history. We show them heroes of history that they learn about in school, but they never learned they were godly. We have books like this. We have a reading list. There's great authors across the United States that deal with this stuff. People just don't hear about them because they don't get coverage in the news. So we have a lot of resources. I mean, we got stuff, but there's other people who have lots of great stuff, and we like to promote others as well.
But
and so go to our website.
If they went to your website, do you have links to other
We places? Do. Go to website at wallbuilders.com, check the helpful links, check the recommended reading list, or check our store, and we got all sorts of old books in our store that we reprint.
That's awesome. David, I want to thank you for what you're doing, not only being with us, but just what you're doing to help educate people and stand up against this.
When we change what people know, we'll change what they expect. When we change what they expect, we'll change our policies, and that'll get us back in a godly direction.
And I appreciate your attitude, too, because I got some criticism by having you on my program before, which didn't bother me. But, I mean, you have had a lot of criticism, and yet you got a great attitude. That's
well,
awesome.
I'm nowhere near perfect, and Jesus got killed for being perfect. So I can handle criticism because he's set the example. We don't care
but
what people say.
I appreciate you, and I know that there's lots of people watching this program who appreciate you standing up and feel like we got people out there fighting for the right things.
My pleasure. Happy
so
to stand.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, brother.
Let me just mention again that we do have these materials. David has this track entitled Thanksgiving in America, and it has quotes from presidents and just a lot of information about the godly heritage of Thanksgiving. We have this little Thanksgiving proclamation. It's a magnet, and it goes on your refrigerator or whatever, and it's Abraham Lincoln's 1863 proclamation. These two things are our gift to you. You can't call us today because our helpline is closed, but you can go to our website, and we have a place where you can get these, and these are our gift to you. And then we have 4 weeks' worth of television programs, 2 weeks that I made with David 4 years ago, and then these 2 weeks that we've made the last 2 weeks, these 4 weeks are available in these DVDs, and these are like 6 CDs. But anyway, if you'll go to our website, it'll give you all this information. And I encourage you to please get this material because this is something that will help you, and it'll help you to be able to defend your faith and to share with other people. So thank you for watching. God bless you. I hope that you had a great Thanksgiving, and I believe that these truths are changing your life. Join me again on Monday for the Gospel Truth.
Today's program is part of a 2-week series in which Andrew and David Barton discuss the origins of Thanksgiving and America's godly heritage. These 2 weeks of programming have been added to a previous 2-week series with Andrew and David titled God and Country. All 4 weeks are available on either CD or DVD as seen on TV for a gift of any amount. This entire series is also available for audio download absolutely free from our website. Go to awmi.net and click on today's TV offer to see all the ways you can get this teaching. If you'd like to receive the Thanksgiving Proclamation Magnet along with David Barton's track titled Thanksgiving in America, visit our website at awmi.net and click on today's TV offer. This offer is limited to one per household while supplies last. We'd also like to remind you that we're offering Andrew's latest book titled Lessons from Elijah for a gift of any amount. Contact us today to get your copy. Our helpline is closed today to allow our employees to celebrate the holiday. But you can always visit our website where you can order ministry materials online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at awmi.net. On our website, you'll not only find materials from today's broadcast, you'll find a wealth of ministry resources available to you. If you prefer, you can order materials by writing us. Use the address on your screen.
This is another update on our construction here at the sanctuary in Woodland Park. And today I am blessed to have my granddaughter, Renan, with me. She's 11 years old. Say hi, Renan.
Hello.
I wanted to give you an update on what's happening with this building. I want to thank those of you who've been partners with us. As I've said nearly every single time, this isn't about the buildings. It's about changing people's lives. Elijah told this widow, says, get vessels, not a few, and I will fill them. We are preparing to bring in thousands of people, empty vessels, and God is going to fill them with His power and His anointing, and it's going to change the world. And this was a $32 million project, and we are less than $1.6 million away from having it done debt-free. That is a praise the Lord. So it's a testimony to the faithfulness of God. So I want to encourage you, if you haven't been a part of this, to consider being a part of it. Those of you who've given so faithfully, thank you so much. Together, we are going to make a difference, and I believe that my granddaughter's world will be impacted because of what's done right here in this building. God bless you. I'd like to really encourage you to join me on January the 2nd through the 4th in Phoenix, Arizona for our Gospel Truth Seminar. This is going to be a special one with Dr. Creflo Dollar speaking with me. I was recently in Atlanta with him and we just had a great time, became good friends. And I tell you what, this man has a grasp of the gospel. We're going to have 7 sessions. Creflo will be teaching 3, I'll be teaching 4. It's going to be a great time. The Biltmore is a 5-star hotel that normally the rooms go for like $300 a night. They've given us a special deal of $139 for 3 days before, 3 days after. You could come and make it a holiday, but it's going to be a special time, January the 2nd through the 4th in Phoenix, Arizona.
The Ministry Training Program is designed to help Charis Bible College graduates identify and be equipped in their calling of either business, media, ministry, missions, or worship. The Media School is a workshop environment where students go beyond theory to build media communications from the ground up. It is a fast-paced, hands-on program that equips the student to expose various ministries to the world and tell their stories. To learn more about this program available to Charis Bible College graduates, visit our website at charisbiblecollege.org.